Good morning. Is it a little too early in the day on a Friday?
Good morning.
Oh, thank you. Someone's had their coffee for sure. Hi, my name is Sam. Today I am going to be focused. Yesterday I did an overview session in terms of Active Directory enables BYOD with IT risk management. Now this is a continuation in that series where we have two more sessions today. The first one is this session, which is more focused on the IT controls. And a lot of our investments around BYOD is about through Active Directory Federation Services as that role service in Windows Server. And we also have another session at noon today, which Shai here will be delivering, which is focused on the web application proxy and making resources inside your firewall available through the web application proxy in Windows Server and with the appropriate set of IT controls to manage risk with respect to authentication, authorization. So these are the two sessions that we have for today. How many of you have attended either the foundation session or my overview session yesterday? All right, we still have a few more people who haven't. So I'm going to provide a little bit of context in terms of what we've been doing. Now, one of the key things from the perspective of in Windows Server 2012 is when we did the planning, we did it as an integrated planning across Windows Server and System Center Intune. Now, a key problem that we really wanted to attack was how do we really think about the notion of multitude of devices within the enterprise where end users want to access these company resources through these devices. So with that perspective in mind, we talked about, you would have seen this in the keynote, in Brad's keynote, is you would have seen the notion of a workplace join. And the notion of a workplace join is the ability for end users to be able to make the device known to the organization, and as a result, they get a set of experiences and IT gets a set of controls associated with that. I'll discuss this in a little more detail. Another key aspect as part of thinking about these devices is that how do we really enable them to work from anywhere? Because I want to be in a coffee shop and be able to maybe read a document on one of my SharePoint sites or be able to kind of go to my expense report application and either fill in an expense report for my device as I'm, you know, traveling, or I want to be able to approve an expense as part of that. Now, a core part of work from anywhere is there's different ways in thinking of work from anywhere. And one aspect of it is, for example, thinking about it as the remote access solution associated with thinking about it as VPN or direct access. That's a network layer connectivity. Now, another key aspect is really thinking about the web application proxy, which is what Shai will be focusing on later today at noon. Is the notion as an organization, they don't want to allow VPN access and allow a network-level access. All of these devices typically are more deal with more HTTP-based applications. So with Windows Server, we put in a new role service called a web application proxy, which provides you the ability to selectively publish applications and control how you provide access to end users to these applications. Finally, when you think about applications and resources where either you never want that data to ever leave the enterprise, or there are some of these applications which are not necessarily catered to these devices, remote desktop services is a great story associated with that. And this is another key part of it. Now, together we see this as Windows Server providing an edge-based access connectivity solution to a set of company resources inside your firewall. Now, another way some organizations do think about it is work from anywhere means moving to the cloud, but we're not focused on that right now in this. But the point that I wanted to make was that it's a multi-pronged approach, and it really varies from, as we talk to customers, it varies from organization to organization. So as a result, we, in Windows Server, are really looking to kind of provide a comprehensive solution that targets most of our customers. All right, my clicker is not working. Now, I'm going to be jumping because I really want to focus a lot of time today on more of demos and more details associated with in ADFS. But this is just a teaser in terms of the set of capabilities. I described this yesterday as well. So for those of you who listened to me yesterday, please, there are a few show of hands who weren't there at the session yesterday. Now, across the set of scenarios that we focus, which is around end value for information workers to make them productive, because it's an imperative for businesses to kind of drive that level of productivity and make it flexible for end users, as well as thinking about IT risk management, we break it down within the Active Directory team into the following capabilities. The first is workplace join, obviously, and I'll reiterate. This is the notion of a device joining to Active Directory or making itself known to Active Directory. But what does it actually do? The process is such that as part of workplace joining to Active Directory, we essentially provision a user at device certificate onto that device. The devices that we support are Windows 8.1 devices and iOS devices. Now, in addition to provisioning the certificate, what we also do is we also provision an equivalent user at device object in Active Directory. And there's a series of interactions as a result of this type of relationship. One is really thinking about single sign-on. Now, normally, when you're coming from any device, we don't know if it's you, if it's your device. So as a result, like you're used to thinking about a seamless experience from your laptops that are domain joined and providing single sign-on support. What we've done with the concept of workplace join is that because now we know that it is you, the user, at your device, as a result, we can provide much longer-lived single sign-on sessions. I have a question there. So the question was, how about Windows Phone? Now, with this release, our first wave of devices that we support is Windows 8.1 and devices as well as iOS devices. But clearly, it implies, from our perspective, we will be working towards offering a wide variety of devices. I can't share exactly on timelines of Windows Phone, but that's something that is definitely on our radar. And the same question applies to some people who are asking me about Android devices as well. So going back to the notion of workplace join, now, because I mentioned that it's also a certificate, this fundamentally gives you the ability to really think about it as a seamless MFA because it is a credential that is authenticated, but it's an augmented credential to your user, to your normal user credential. So as a result, you've got a user credential, you have a user at device credential. Now, when you combine that together, that's your seamless multi-factor authentication. Now, when you're using it as seamless multi-factor authentication, of course, we recommend you to say, please make sure the provisioning process is protected by an alternate multi-factor or some other secure mechanism that kind of helps you get there. So that's seamless MFA as part of workplace join. Finally, the notion of knowing about the device gives you the ability to drive controls associated with policies that restrict access to only devices known to your organization. And that's an important aspect as well. In the world of work from anywhere, there's more resources being exposed out into the internet. Now, the fact is that a lot of organizations are worried about and concerned about it. This notion of workplace join gives you the ability to be able to really restrict that access to that resource only to these devices known to your organization. Now, I've already talked a little about single sign-on and work from anywhere. Now, I'm moving on to a little more to the IT, which is where a lot of my focus today is going to be. A key aspect of thinking about devices, everyone talks to us about multi-factor authentication. Now, in the past in ADFS, we really, I wouldn't say we had support for X509 authentication, but we really didn't do a good job of integrating with third-party solutions for multi-factor. Then there has been a plethora of methods. We've published a white paper. Others have integrated and published white papers. But at the end of it, it was external to ADFS. We didn't know how to think about it. Admins didn't know how to write policies associated with it, and it was difficult to actually configure and manage. So with this new release in Windows Server 2012 R2, we've enhanced a series of controls where we are able to integrate with more third parties and provide more flexible controls for admins to think about multi-factor authentication. multi-factor access control is, we already had some support for this. This is, in ADFS, you could write issuance authorization rules against resources that targeted and said, hey, based on user-based data, you can actually write rules to say who gets access to this resource, which essentially translates in ADFS to say who gets a security token for this resource. For the people who are familiar with the domain controllers and the Kerberos world, it means who gets to get a TGS ticket for an SPN. Now, with this release, what we've done is continue to enhance the support for that. Because now, not only do we have the user context, we have, with our multi-factor authentication, we have strength of authentication context. With workplace join, we have the device context, and we've also enhanced the notion of the request context, which is your network location, your IP address. All of these are available for you as an administrator to be able to write the policy that drives is based on your user need. So you got user, device, strength of authentication, and network location and IP address, which is more about request context, to be able to run authorization decisions. Finally, the piece in terms of thinking about our BYOD is essentially, in the world of modern devices, we see more and more enterprise apps want to provide native experiences in these devices. As a result, what happens is that more people are moving to the RESTful service model, thin clients focused on HTML5, and one of the key things across both Active Directory with ADFS and Azure Active Directory, you'll see us provide more OAuth support. We've added OAuth support in ADFS in this version. And our goal is essentially to provide the libraries for developers to build custom LOB apps to be able to have a single model in which, on both on the client side as well as on the service validation, to be able to build these apps in a standard manner such that it doesn't matter whether the app lives inside the firewall, it doesn't matter if the app lives in the cloud, it doesn't matter if your users are in Azure Active Directory or users are in on-premises Active Directory, or if your user is inside your firewall or outside your firewall. That is our goal, to make sure that in terms of a developer support, we will be able to have a simple model for developers to build these forms of types of applications on these modern devices. So as I will be focusing more on the multi-factor authentication and multi-factor access control pieces today. So my whole conversation today is about securing access with respect to, and these are all about controls within Active Directory Federation Services. Now, the way we break secure access is there are different pivots to it. The first pivot is really thinking about how do you want the user to authenticate? How do you want to govern that with respect to your applications? The reason why we bring this up is that in the past world, this was fairly very restrictive, not too many controls in terms of thinking about how you govern authentication. So with Active Directory Federation Services in this release of Windows Server, we've really enhanced the notion of what's flexible authentication, and I'll go into those details in a bit. Similarly, govern authorization, which we just call as like multi-factor access control. I'll show you some of the key pieces, enhancements that we made on that. Now, the third portion is about protecting user accounts. Now, we talked about protecting resources with respect to authorization. But the notion is that one of the key things is there is a series of things in terms of even protecting the user accounts and how do you do that. It's a combination of both multi-factor authentication as well as a series of enhancements that we've made to be able to kind of provide more security to potential user account attacks as well. Finally, it's about protecting user devices. The fact is, in this modern world, either devices, you know, go like, how many of you have lost a cell phone or a tablet? All right, there's few people. Stuff like that happens, and including me, I have as well. So the notion of how does workplace join give you the ability to kind of govern access with respect to lost devices is also a key paradigm that we've introduced in this release. So let me get started. For each of these sections, I do have a place where, you know, feel free to ask questions. You can get as detailed as you'd like to. If you have a question, it'd be great if you come up to the mic, if possible. If not, I will repeat that question for the benefit of others. So governing authentication. Now, In the previous world of ADFS, we really didn't have very good controls. We were based on IIS for some of these. And if you wanted to differentiate, at best, you could differentiate between inside versus outside. And the way you differentiated outside was you went to each proxy machine, and you went to web.config, and you got confused about how it was listed out. And you had to find an element in the web.config, XML element in the web.config element. Now, in this model, what we've done is made authentication a two-step process. There's a primary authentication phase, is the first step in which this is about authenticating the AD credential and the native AD credential that AD supports, which could be username, password, your curb TGT, you could be a certificate based associated with your AD account as well. Now, this is now all moved into a configuration. In a sense, it's into the ADFS configuration. I'll show you in a bit in a demo, is that it's a simple way in which you get to control and differentiate in the primary authentication what do you want for inside your environment versus outside your environment. Another key aspect of primary authentication, this is more an enhancement, not as much as a risk control perspective, is that we've heard a lot of feedback in terms of ADFS uses Windows Integrated Authentication by default inside. And it's optimized because your Windows domain join machines can get desktop SSO as a result of it. However, we've seen browsers that don't necessarily support that seamless type of authentication, and they use NTLM. And sometimes browsers don't even support the extended protection authentication that's part of NTLM challenge in newer Windows versions. And as a result, what happens is that an end user gets to see an NTLM prompt. We've heard a lot of feedback that's very jarring experience for end users. So what we've added in this version is a notion of a Windows integrated authentication fallback. To forms. So what it means is that the admin is given a set of user agent strings. By default, we ship it with IE strings and our Windows user agent strings. And as a result, what happens is that this is the whitelist for Windows integrated authentication. If a request comes in with an user authentication user agent string that is different from that list, we will automatically fall back to forms so that it gives you a seamless experience associated. So in the case where you did connect, for example, your iPad or your Chrome browser or your Firefox browser, you would be able to kind of just get a forms-based authentication rather than an NTLM prompt. Now, another part of the primary authentication is the notion of the device authentication. This is the service side of workplace join. When you enable this, essentially, ADFS goes into accept mode for client TLS. And the way, what it does is, one of the key things that I think you may have noticed, stuff happens under the covers seamlessly. And the way we do that is essentially by controlling something that the client TLS channel supports, which is the ability to provide an issuer. Now, because the device registration service in ADFS has its own issuer, we essentially supply the issuer in that channel, and as a result, because we expect only one certificate to be available, it's seamlessly provided back in the channel to us. So we are in accept mode, and it's we do the validation against Active Directory as part of being in accept mode. So this is the device authentication piece, and as I mentioned, it's an augmented credential to the user credential. And there are a multitude of reasons why we went down that route, but I'd be happy to talk about it later. Another key aspect is that we're really working towards enhancing the single sign-on support. But there's are a set of applications where it is sensitive enough where you do not want to use the SSO. You want a fresh credential to be provided. And in some cases, you want a fresh multi-factor credential to be supported, to be supplied by the end user. To support that paradigm, we now have a simple way in which previously you had to have, the app had to be able to do that. It had to send a protocol parameter in the standard set of protocols that ADFS supported to be able to do that. In the new version, we've said, okay, hey, we've heard a lot of customers talk about it and said, I don't have control on the application. How do I do this? Now, as part of being able to support that, people started doing a bunch of module validation, like HTTP modules as well, and customizing. But to kind of moving away from that and make it simple for admins, you can select an application and you can say, hey, I want a fresh credential to be supplied every time for this application. So now the admin is in control and not the application to do to enforce that type of a policy. All right, before I get into the demo, any quick questions? Okay. Now, so let me go to the ADFS machine first. I'm in the ADFS MMC console. Let's see. So as you can see, we have a new authentication policies within the as a node out there. Now, when you click on that, you can see the notion of primary authentication, and we have a set of global settings and per relying party settings. Now, let me just go quickly into the global settings. Excuse me. Now, this is what I talked about in terms of saying that we've now kind of made it. It's all driven out of the ADFS configuration database. It's a single change associated with that as a result of it. So you have simple ways to say, hey, I want, on the extranet, I only allow forms authentication in this case. And on the intranet, I allow both forms as well as Windows authentication. And I may choose certificate authentication as well. The act of doing this tells to ADFS that these are the things that are enabled between inside versus outside. And as a result, it will modify its behaviors. Another thing that is on the bottom part of it is essentially the notion of enabling device authentication. This tells ADFS that says, hey, I'm going to go into accept mode to go look for these workplace joint certificates and augment the credential, augment the authentication context, and help drive in the rest of the system as to how it works. So let's kind of, there's another key piece that I want to show. But to highlight that, let's start with a client machine. And I'm going to be using the same app through my whole session, except for one demo. And this is my Who Am I app. The Who Am I app is just spitting out the authentication, the context that we get after authenticating. And right now you see a newer customizable end user experience from ADFS. You see an illustration on the left. You see a logo on the top that you can customize through PowerShell. You don't have to change it. However, if you do want to change the look and feel of it, we give you more CSS controls as well, where you can create new web themes. A key part of our end user experience was to really drive towards a more of a responsive design to suit the different form factors. So if I change the size of actually it's more apparent in desktop browser, in which if I resized it would automatically change the look and feel based on JavaScript running underneath the covers. So in this case, you have just the forms-based authentication. Now let me just quickly go and change the setting on ADFS and say, okay, from the extranet perspective, I'm going to add certificate authentication as well. Now, what that this tells us from an end user experience is that when there are more than one that's enabled, ADFS looks at it from the perspective of saying, hey, there's more than one available. If it's not coming from the protocol to decide what it is, then it becomes a user choice at the end of it. However, there's a set of optimizations for Windows Integrated Authentication inside. If Windows Integrated Authentication is ever there, we'll always choose it because that's the most, the most seamless experience, so we have optimized for that. And combined with our fallback of Windows Integrated Authentication to forms, it's a fairly seamless experience for the end user. So now let's go back to the client and see what changed as a result of it. Let me just refresh. So now you see what happened was that the fact that I just, with a simple control, enabled that certificate authentication, this is across my whole service and all the nodes in my farm, I've just got now a choice because I've got both forms. And we do some optimization and an experience when we always have a forms-based experience. Now, this is also very relevant as a choice when you think about multi-factor authentication, and I'll get to that in a short bit. The messages in terms of how you think about the sign-in using X509. For example, in your organization, it could be some form of a smart card. It could be some other kind of card associated with authenticating. Now, these are all customizable by the admin to make sure that you put in the right form of message to end users and make it easier for them to select these. So that concludes this portion of my demo where, let me just log in. Oh, I did forget something. So let me log in with my standard John Doe account. Now, what I wanted to highlight more was that this is all the data. You see data about the user, you see their group seed information, you see the SAM account or Windows account name, the UPN, you see that I authenticated with my password. Now, I wanted to kind of bring your attention more to what we have as request context. This is a key change that we've made. We make a more of the like the environmental context to be more like readily available in the claims pipeline that ADFS has. Now, as a result, across our entire pipeline, you now have this data to make the right decisions. For example, we've heard customers that say, hey, we understand IP addresses are spoofable, but we do want some set of controls to be put in as part of our compliance initiatives that says, I'm going to kind of make some decisions in terms of access control based on IP addresses. Now you can do that because we provide you. And you can see there are two IP addresses in there. Because right now I'm going through the proxy, you see the forwarded client IP to be what this client connected up to my proxy machine. Now, that's the IP. And then you see the fact is the MS client IP is what is the IP address that connected to the ADFS machine itself. So with a combination of these gives you the notion of like where your request is coming from. Now, in addition, you can also see the fact that we simplified the notion of an inside corporate network for a Boolean variable so that it's easy for you to make that decision if you want to just differentiate between inside versus outside. Another aspect is that we've also given you the notion of the ability to kind of point to the endpoint information that's available as well. So these are all request context information that's now fully available within your system to be able to do the right things. So let me move forward to my next portion. Now, I talked about the primary authentication. I said it was a two-step process. Now we're going into the second step. The second step is the additional authentication. Now, all applications aren't built the same way because out of 100 apps, you may say 80% of those, or 10 apps, you may say 80 of those, 8 of those apps, essentially it's okay, I don't need multi-factor authentication. But for those two apps, you definitely need multi-factor authentication. So as part of being able to support those paradigms, we have the notion where you have the ability to write a policy on a per application basis that decides the trigger on when you need additional authentication. With primary authentication, you've already done authenticating a base user, a device. And as a result, you have all of the information that I just talked about, user, device, even strength of authentication and network location to now make the decision based on a policy that says, should I do additional authentication? So this gives the ability for the admin to support a myriad of business kind of use cases. For example, a simple use case that says that, hey, for my application, all my users don't have to do multi-factor authentication, but the administrators who manage that application that are defined by some set, it could be a claims-based set, it could be a security group, I want them to use multi-factor authentication because they are making changes to a critical application. As a result, I want multi-factor authentication. You can go define that in a policy. Or you might be able to say that, hey, for this application, all extranet usage should require multi-factor authentication. So you can write that policy as well. So we provide the full context available for you to make that decisions, and we make a few simple controls as well to go do that. Now, we also, of course, we have the support of thinking about not only do we support on a per-application basis, if you have a policy that applies to all your applications, we also have the ability to kind of apply it at a global scope as well. Now, in terms of what do you get when you start doing additional authentication? You first get the notion of, like, what we have out of box, which is certificate authentication, which a lot of people use it as smart card. And as a result, you can do additional authentication with that and get a stronger credential validated as part of doing that. However, once you've really done the additional authentication, what we've done is We've enhanced support by providing a framework where you can plug in any third-party multi-factor. In the past, as I mentioned, we really couldn't do this. It was very hard to integrate any third-party system. You could kind of surround it around ADFS in some cases. The experience was jarring. It was difficult to configure. ADFS didn't know about the multi-factor authentication. So as a result, in lots of cases, couldn't issue statements to downstream applications. So there was a series of challenges associated with multi-factor authentication. Now, in this case, what we said was that let's build a framework so that we're going to take, it should be possible for taking 95% of any of the multi-factor authentication providers and be able to plug that into ADFS. Now, the way we built the framework is that, or based on a few principles. For us, it was important to make sure we provided a consistent user experience. We wanted, because we're doing all of these forms of customizations across that sign-in experience, we wanted that same seamless experience associated with multitude of form factors and be able to drive that seamless experience, a common logo for organizations, and generally the similar look and feel. So we wanted the ability. The second aspect is that we wanted the ability for the multi-factor provider to essentially be able to drive the conversation with the end user. So in this case, we have a multi-legged protocol. Like, it's not a protocol. It's more an API interface. To be able to take input from the user, give it back to the provider validates, they may challenge with additional input. Think of the security question and answer type of a challenge. You may be asked three questions. If you get two wrong, the provider again gives you the fourth and the fifth question for you to answer right. Now, if you fail on all of them, then essentially it validates, says, hey, no, this doesn't happen. That is the type of system we've enabled in the framework to be able to integrate. So think of this as you saw the notion of how many of you saw the phone call being made to Phone Factor or Windows Azure Authentication Active? That was built using this framework. And even though it's Microsoft, it's still not a Windows. So it's kind of like a third party in some sense to from a Windows experience because it doesn't have a Windows license. But at the same point in time, that we've used that framework, the framework that's available to drive that. I also have another third party, and I'll quickly show that in a demo. Now, to showcase our multi-factor authentication, we are going to actually demonstrate that one of the core aspects about us driving on the ADFS is that now, traditionally, we looked at it from the perspective of standard web applications with SharePoint. We've taken and enhanced that to say these modern applications that use OAuth, bearer profile, talking to RESTful services, as well as thinking about even applications that are supported by the web application proxy. All our work, the work that you just saw in terms of the set of capabilities, span across all these applications, whether it be cloud-based resources, resources inside the firewall protected by the web application proxy, or more of these traditional applications as well. And to kind of highlight that, we're going to demonstrate work folders with multi-factor authentication. And to introduce work folders quickly, how many of you know about work folders? All right, there's a good show of hands. So to introduce work folders quickly, I'd like to call on Adam from the file server team to quickly provide a few notes about it.
Thanks, Sam. Good morning, everyone. So as Sam said, he's going to use work folders to show you some of the integration with Active Directory Federation Services. So for those who haven't seen either the general session we had on work folders or the deep dive session that I did on work folders, we're just going to go through a few slides and give you the context of what work folders is. And to start, I just want to talk about the file server itself, because work folders is an extension of the existing file server. File servers have been around for decades. In fact, the original server workload is really the file server. And since then, it has grown exponentially to the point where exabytes of data are deployed annually just to support information workers. The file server was first started to be an incredibly simple and efficient tool for managing file access in your organization. It has grown to achieve incredible scalability and breakthrough performance. And around the file server, this rich ecosystem has developed, both of Microsoft tools and third-party tools, to help you manage and protect the data on the file server. But expectations have changed radically. This guy is your worst nightmare. He'll go to absolute extremes to get access to his data on the devices that he wants to use. He also happens to be the CEO. Do you want to tell him that he's violating corporate data security policies? Do you think he'll listen to you? You really have three choices. The first thing you can do is just ignore the fact that this is happening, putting data in your organization at risk. Or you can write a policy and say that this type of activity is forbidden. You can watch him work around you. Your final option is to choose to embrace it. And we're introducing work folders to help you do exactly that. You can allow the information worker to access their individual work data. Think of this as their home directory that just exists on their device for them, without them having to think about accessing a file server. You have a tool to allow them to work the way they want to work, and simultaneously, asynchronously, bring that data into a file server so that you have a copy of that data in that organization in case the employee leaves, so that you can apply strong policies to that data, like you might use classification to identify sensitive information, and then use RMS to encrypt those sensitive documents. We know that you need to provide access from all of their devices. Our priority at the release of Windows 8.1 is, of course, making sure that Inbox, without installing an additional application, without setting up anything complicated, the user just has access to their work folders from Windows 8.1. Shortly after general availability, we'll also provide a download to support Windows 7 devices, because we know that's what you primarily have deployed in your organization. And also shortly after general availability, we will offer support for iPads, because we know that's what you're getting asked to support. Access to these files is really from anywhere. The user doesn't have to think about whether they're inside the organization, outside of the organization. You can certainly use a VPN, but there's no requirement that you use a VPN. All the access happens over SSL and can come through a web proxy or even just by using firewall rules. And we give you the ability and your end user the ability to remain in compliance with your corporate data security policies. This is a high-level view of what a single server work folders deployment looks like. You can see the devices coming in from outside of the firewall, over the proxy, over SSL. We rely on Windows authentication, using Kerberos internally, using Digest through the proxy, and optionally, as Sam will talk about, we can use ADFS for authentication and work folders, which gives us three capabilities. The first is simply the support of multi-forest deployments through a proxy, because Digest does not support that. The second is taking advantage of all the multi-factor authentication that Sam's been talking about for work folders. And the third is to limit work folders to registered devices. And by doing that, we allow you to take advantage of the seamless multi-factor auth that Sam described with the user at device certificate that's installed on the device during a workplace join. Since this, the other policies that we let you enforce at the work folder server are simple things like enforcing a password and a device lock. And we also allow you to encrypt the work folder's container on the device so that all of that content is not only encrypted while it sits on the device, but can take advantage of a mobile device manager like Intune to selectively wipe just the enterprise data on the device and not affect any of the personal data. And of course, since this is a file server, you get to take advantage of all of the things that work on a file server today. If you're setting quotas today, if you're doing reporting, classification, RMS encryption, all of these things just continue to work because it's really just a natural extension of a file server. And with that, I'll turn it back to Sam. If any of you have further questions about work folders, I'll stay around at the end of the session. More than happy to talk to you.
Thanks, Adam. appreciate that. So I'm going to quickly jump into my demo right now with work folders. Now, before we get started, is that I wanted to show you how I created that policy. Now, work folders, in this case, is already a relying party. So, you know, going back to the authentication policies, is that I can now, we have a per relying party trust policy. Right now, there's nothing with custom settings, and that's why you see this list. So I'm going to pick up Windows Server work folders here and then click the Edit Multi-Factor Authentication. So let's take a look at it. Oops. Now, I talked about all these contexts, but in the UI, we provide some simple context available for you to do this. In PowerShell, you have the ability to do a lot more. So in this case, we provide, a lot of times people want to say based on the user attribute, which typically is security group. So in this case, I'm going to use that. We also say, talk about whether for unregistered devices or the notion of extranet and the network location are some of the ways you can do this. I'm going to now use like a security group, which I have as already configured, which John Doe is already part of, which is the finance work folders. Think of a use case where this is about finance data. We always want multi-factor authentication in place to make that device essentially be able to sync the data, on, like my data, onto this device, because I happen to be working a lot on sensitive information. You can combine that with dynamic access control, where you have automatic classification and encryption of that information as well. So all of those benefits that you essentially have. So, and that's pretty much what I had to do to kind of say, anyone who's part of the finance group, work folders group, when they access are asking for a security token for the work folder service, then they need multi-factor authentication. The next step is that, hey, how do I control generally what's available there for multi-factor authentication? It's right here, this step. So in this case, We have a few providers. Certificate authentication is what you get out of AD. That's one of the providers in there. You have, like, I've got phone factor in here, and I've got one more provider from, don't worry about the name. That name is not actually true. So you have one of these providers. So right now, I've enabled the phone factor as a provider. So that's pretty much all I had to do. Let's go back to our client. And set up work folders. Now, in this case, I'm going to just supply my email address because work folder supports email-based discovery. Now, at this point in time, it's discovered this, and as an end result, you see work folders actually popping up a browser-based credential. Now, in the OAuth model, this is fundamentally the way credential collection works. You ask for a security token, and it's a web browser credential collection model where your server side can essentially drive the credential collection. And why we really like that model is that you really don't need to build clients and build UI for credential collection across a wide variety of resources. Everything is server-driven, and as you can see out here, this is the same UI, but it has been modified a little bit. It automatically, based on the form factor, kind of changes as a result of it. So let me type in my John Doe credential. We have a bug. Oops. Type my password wrong. That doesn't look, control. Thank you. So there you go. So now, what's happened is that ADF has authenticated John Doe with Active Directory, and now we saw that John Doe was part of the finance work folders group, and as a result, we say, hey, we need to do something else as part of that. We provide a message. Some of the message out here is customizable. But the bottom part of the screen, which is phone factor and the buttons, is essentially delivered by the provider here. and is delivered to the end user to say, what is the next step that you can do? And right now, I've configured Phone Factor or Windows Azure Authentication to call my phone. So hopefully, yesterday, I saw a bit of a delay. There you go. Is the audio on?
Thank you for using Microsoft Sign-in
just call me.
System. Press the pound key to finish signing in. You have been signed in.
And that's it. It's the same model, what you saw in the rest of the set of applications, for example, in Workplace Join as well, in Brad's demo. It's the same type of a model where now all I have to do is to kind of, I'm authenticated, and I accept the standard workflow set of policies associated with that, and I can begin starting to sync files associated. So now let's take a look at my work folders. And all the data that was my data available on the file server was now synced onto my device. So this gives you the additional protection to be able to kind of drive the right set of multi-factor authentication controls. Now, I do have one more demo as well with another third-party provider, and I wanted to kind of showcase that as well. So let's go back to the SDS machine or ADFS machine and also take my Who Am I application and say, edit, and say, hey, if I'm John Doe, or I'll use a different policy. Because I'm always coming to the proxy here, I'll say, if I'm coming from, anytime I'm coming from the extranet, I need to essentially provide multi-factor authentication. Now, I will go back and enable the other provider, and you'll see some changes in behaviors, and I'll explain that. Okay, so now let's go back to the client. Let's sign in as John Doe. Oops. I have to change my password tomorrow, or right now. Ah. So now what you see is that there are two providers that are available. As a result, we actually make it a choice. Because one of the use cases that we looked at was that it's end-user convenience. Sometimes I have one factor available, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I might have my phone, sometimes I have my smart card. Those are the types of use cases that we said, hey, we want to kind of make that a user choice associated with how you think about the provider. Now, in this case, we now have a SafeNet provider, which is a soft OTP solution, which I actually have an application on my phone out here. So let me go start that application so that I get my OTP. Which I've already paired with the service, so I have my OTP available. Out here, so now you see a different set of experiences being delivered by that end, the third-party provider. You've got SafeNet, they've had the logo in there. And now all I have to do is to supply the OTP out here, which is 598-7659. And now this provider is going to talk to the SafeNet authentication service, and as a result is going to then fundamentally be able to go validate in doing that. So this gives us the ability now to say we can integrate pretty much any provider. You saw a phone-based system, you saw an OTP. It could have been a hardware OTP token that I was using. It could be a different set of credentials as well. One of the other things that we look at is that, hey, we also give you, you can examine any information through JavaScript as well in terms of the client. And if you make certain types of like DNA analysis through JavaScript, that's also feasible with this type of a solution. So any questions on this so far before I move on to the next section? All right, you're a bright bunch today this morning. So as I discussed, we have a couple of partners, which is our own Windows Azure Authentication, SafeNet. We'll have them. They will have this available at our RTM timeframe as well. This is one of their prototypes. More on the way. We're working with more partners as well. But we've also already had questions saying, hey, can I build my own? Yes, it's going to be an SDK, which is essentially going to be available where we'll publish the SDK on MSDN, where you can go build your own if you really need to as well, and you have that ability. Now, the next key step is about governing authorization. Now, I'm going to run through this pretty quickly, because most of these are existing enhancements. Now, what I'm going to talk about is that not only now you have the ability to write all of these rules, where you can especially say that you can say that allow only workplace-joined devices for a specific application because you don't want any random internet access. So it's only devices that are known to my organization because I can actually go and audit that device information. I can go talk about the IP address so I have more compliance-based controls associated with that. A key part that we did in terms of enhancing the end-user experience is that a lot of times when you provide an access denied, it's very confusing. I don't know, as an end user, doesn't know what to do next. And as a result, it becomes a help desk call. So one of the key things that we've provided is in the cases where admins can provide a end user friendly message to say what to do next, they can take that and be able to customize that message on a per application basis and do that. So let me quickly jump into my demo to showcase that. Okay, so I have already set up some PowerShell scripts to run that. So let's go through my custom. Let's see. So in this case, I've actually used PowerShell to drive this. And it's just setting a single, there's the last PowerShell, which is set bash ADFS relying party web content, is one that drives the content associated. It supports full localized messages as well, so you can add messages on a per locale. So based on the client browser locale, the ADFS system will essentially provide the right message to the end user. And that's pretty much it. And let's go through another thing that I just want to do to speed up the process here is, let me remove the multi-factor authentication. For the Who Am I app. All right, let's go through the same. Now, in this case, what I've done is that I've required John Doe to be part of a special security group to access this application. So now, If on the client, I go try to access the application, same application. So now you see that customized message kicking in. John is not part of the special security group yet. So as a result, you see that message that we said, hey, your admin expects you to do something. Please go talk to your manager or go to your self-service group portal to try to join yourself to a group so that they can approve it. All of that is essentially feasible for you to kind of provide a customized experience when you drive authorization this way. So let's just go quickly add John to that security group. Let's go to the domain controller. Added, and let's try to log in again. So now you see John now, just because the fact that we just added John to the group, he now has access. Let's move forward in terms of the next set of things around security access. All right. Now, a key aspect of the notion of protecting user accounts, a lot of times while we, like within the Active Directory team, we don't like exposing usernames and passwords to applications, all right? So as part of even our thinking about OAuth support, like the notion was that right now the way applications work is they try to store a credential in the application. So if it's a malicious application, you don't want to release that credential to applications. So we move more to web-based credential collection. However, usernames and passwords are still in use. One of the challenges that organizations look at is saying that, hey, I've got lockout policies. But now when I think about extranet access, it's very easy once they just know the user ID. In lots of cases, the UPN equals email address, and all they have to know is the UPN address. It's easy to go lock out my user and run DOS attacks. Or they might say that, hey, I'm going to, like, there's brute force attacks against that. So a key investment that we made is the notion of an extranet-based soft account lockout in ADFS. So what this means is that we provide, like, an admin can configure threshold and an observation window. So if there are more than X bad passwords, which is the greater than the threshold, we will automatically go and lock, soft lockout, where that authentication request is never, ever attempted at the domain controller. And as a result, we'll immediately fail the request to go do that. So as a result, you only get X number of tries associated with that. And beyond that, you're kind of locked out for that observation window. Once that observation window passes, we'll allow one more to go through. If it succeeds, AD will kind of do a few things as part of doing that success, and we start allowing access. And again, you have to get to the threshold. But it fails, the threshold again goes up. So as a result, you will again lock the end user for another observation window. So let's Now, it can also work in conjunction with a lockout policy. So in the case you have lockout policies, we expect you to configure this threshold lower than the AD account lockout. What it means is that this is only about extranet access. So if it means that you can still, if you have other means to actually come inside your firewall and access, everything continues to work and you're not impacted as a result. And it's only about your internet-facing connection that we are really protecting in this case. Now, similarly, we also have this notion of protection for lost devices. So because devices get lost and stolen. Now, if you remember, the notion is that for AD Workplace Join, we actually go create a device entity in the directory, a user at device entity in the directory. It's not a computer object. It's a newer object to go do that. And by virtue of essentially being able to control or removing or disabling, as long as that credential is provided, we will essentially always validate against the directory that it is a valid device. The end user hasn't reported as lost and stolen, so as a result, the device object hasn't been disabled or removed as a result. And if for some reason the credential that was supplied to the for the lost device, we would and is disabled, ADFS will automatically stop the authentication process. It will just deny every aspect of the authentication. To quickly showcase this, let me move on to the demo. Let's go back to my SDS. I'm going to run through a quick join workplace to showcase this. So as some of you probably have seen this, workplace join can be accessed in Windows through the network in PC settings, and you can see workplace, where you see both settings for registration, which is workplace join, as well as enrollment. For example, if you want to subscribe to, let's say, Intune to manage the device as well. Same experience. This is going through an OAuth flow, and here what you see is the standard web authentication broker that's available in Windows clients. Hopefully I typed my password right. All right, that's... So now if I go back to the client application, you see... Let me show you a little bit of the SSO kicking in as well. So this is the first time I'm actually accessing the resource after I have joined, and so I need to supply a credential once. So now you can see a new set of claims data that's actually popped up, which actually is because seamlessly underneath the covers, we actually validated that certificate as well. Now, one key aspect is that previously I had to keep signing in. Now, if I actually go and try to sign in again now, because I'm workplace joined, I will get a seamless sign-in experience associated with that, because we know it's your device, we'll give you a longer-lived session based on admin policy, and I don't have to keep typing my credentials. You saw me making mistakes. That's the same frustration that end users have as well. Now let's go take a look at the devices for John Doe and remove one of them, which is I just registered. Oops. So this is something that I've just registered. So I'll just provide that. And I've actually gone and removed this device in the directory. Now let's go back to see the same experience from the client machine. Let's just close this and right, what's going on? My client seems to have frozen. Now, what you saw seamlessly with that was a seamless experience. I went and disabled that device object. So at this point in time, the certificate credential is being presented. It's bound to our SSO. And as a result, we go look at the directory and say, hey, is this there? Is it alive and enabled? When we go do that, we say, okay, hey, I can't find this. You're preventing a credential that is not recognized by Active Directory. So as a result, we don't even ask you for anything. As long as the certificate is provided, we keep logging audit failures associated with this and say, hey, this is, and this message is also customizable by you to go do that. This, we will provide you the credential, we'll provide you the IP address, so in case it's a lost device, someone's trying to access resource, you can actually track that information and follow your operational procedure to do the next set of steps. Now, let me also jump now to the extranet soft lockout to quickly highlight that. Let's see, this is 3. I just have to push time a little bit quicker. Any questions? Let me take a quick question while that starts up. Yes, please. So for workplace join, we store the device objects in a container in Active Directory. So as a result, we need schema change updates to be able to just a schema update on your existing 2008 or higher set of domain controllers, and that's all we need. And you can also get to control where you place the device objects as well. The question was about the registration, about the where we store it in Active Directory, the user and device objects. So let's run through this as well. Okay, so I right now have I've got my favorite LDP tool, which shows the John Doe user. And right now, if I click on that, there's my John Doe. If I clicked on that, you'll now see a bad password count, which is the third attribute, which is at 0, because I just successfully logged in John Doe. So let's quickly go back to the client and actually... Oh, the one thing that I have to do as part of that is I need to quickly leave so that the certificate goes away. Okay. So let's go try to enter in a few bad passwords. So I'm just going to type in something. And I'm going to type something so you can see. I'm going to type in twice. And now, let's go back and look at the domain controller. You will now see the bad password count has now jumped up to 2. This is where the threshold, I've set the threshold for this demo at 2. This is where the soft account lockout kicks in. So, and you can see the last bad password time was also logged as well. So now if I go in and type in, let me do it a couple of times. If I go back and look at the domain controller on John Doe's object, you see the fact that the bad password count never went up. That's because ADFS is already saying that, hey, this user is locked out, so I'm going to stop trying to do authentication requests to the domain controller for my observation window. In this case, my observation window is 1 minute. So I have to come back at 2:37, so it's still within this time window. So even if I did type in my correct password, which I will try to type it in correctly. Okay, so we just passed our observation window in this case where 1 minute passed, and as a result, we say, okay, the observation window is done based on the last bad password time, and we then go try to reach the DC to essentially go, the domain controller to go validate the account. So this gives you the ability to be able to say only about extranet when I'm using usernames and passwords across all our protocol endpoints. It can be web browser, it can be the rich client, even through our AWS Trust endpoints. We have a consistent mechanism, and even through our change password endpoints, all of this has the same level of protection once you've enabled an extranet soft account lockout. Okay, let me move back. That concludes my demo. So let me move back to the last slide. There are a few additional things that we've added, and I want to kind of really make sure in terms of the security aspect. With the workplace join, we give longer-lived SSO. Now, there might be certain aspects of risks that you want to think about associated with that as well. However, there's always a notion of some set of breach events that every organization has controls, operational controls on really how to kind of think about it. And we also support the notion of the breach event that says that, hey, if anything happens, we call it the hammer feature. All you have to do is set a timestamp into ADFS's properties, and we will ignore every SSO. We'll invalidate any SSO credential that is provided before that point in time across all our set of protocols and to be able to do that. So this means that you're forcing a new set of credentials like after that period of time. So that gives you the ability to recycle and say, hey, whether you want to reset passwords across end users and be able to provide that, you can actually go drive that. Another key aspect is that the notion of, how many of you know about pass the hash attacks? All right. So when you think about these SSO credentials as well, you have the person will say, hey, what if I steal something and play it on another machine? Now, this SSO credential is strongly bound to that workplace join device when we have workplace join. As a result, we always have the credential bound to what's being presented as a proof of possession on the channel, which is the workplace join certificate. So now when either you take that SSO credential and you try to play it on another machine, we will immediately reject it and invalidate that SSO credential. You remove, if you try to remove the workplace join itself and the certificate was disappeared and the certificate is not available in the channel, we will reject it as well. But you saw that essentially where I just did a leave and then some of our behaviors changed. So our SSO experience fundamentally is always when you have workplace join, you have a stronger security model associated with always binding the credential associated with the channel. And that feature also kind of extends a little bit to the web application proxy as well. Now you have a channel all the way at the time to establishing the session, you to the resource up to the edge endpoint, you can actually maintain a secure session across with this workplace join concept as well. And that pretty much concludes I already talked about this demo. We have, as I mentioned, the workplace web application proxy. We have a session later this afternoon at noon. And there's a series of sessions we've already done out here. I will be available out here for more questions. We have a series of additional investments in terms of, I just briefly touched upon the customization of sign-in experiences. There's customization of home realm discovery. We have organizational account discovery for HRD within ADFS. There's a series of investments that we made in there. Another key thing is that we now support, as part of a BYOD initiative, we now support the notion of update, change passwords, where you know your old password and you need to change your password. Previously, you might have to come from your domain join machine. It's inside the network. We now provide the ability to update the password just from your BYOD devices through ADFS. I'm not showing it today. However, it's protected only to workplace join devices so that we have a more secure aspect of that privileged operation to change that. So on a workplace join devices, if the admin enables this, you can fundamentally be able to change the password from outside your organization on any of your devices as long as it's workplace join. Outside of that, a key thing for people who really understand the ADFS notions, how many of you know the SSO cookie bloat problem? All right. There are a few hands out there. The fact is that some SSO cookies are like part of the HTTP headers. And in the prior versions of ADFS, we encode the group SID information inside it. As a result, for organizations where you have users that belong to a lot of groups, the cookie size, it's an unbound like size. So at some point in time, especially on iOS devices which have a smaller header limits, we've seen customers complain about the fact that SSO cookie is not set. Now, with the fact that we're giving longer-lived SSO sessions as well, what we've done in the new version of ADFS is that we kind of have this dynamic group SID hydration where we never store the group SIDs within the SSO cookie. It's always auto-generated when the SSO cookie is consumed by ADFS to drive single sign-on sessions. So this way, you don't have stale information in the SSO cookie because it's a long-lived session. You always have up-to-date freshness associated with group memberships, as well as the fact that the cookie size gets a lot smaller in terms of the size of the cookie. So that concludes my presentation. Any questions? Does this resonate with you in terms of some of the investments that we made? Show of hands. All right. This was a short release. We've done a lot of work to kind of like across all of the Windows Server teams to really push together on a common theme, which is our people-centric pillar. You'll see us continuing to update things on a regular fashion. I hope you find all the features across us really useful. Thank you.